in group, when you group up and you got a group of kids doing something, that's the same thing as a gang. You feel me? A group of people getting together for a mission. So when you teach them the right way that young, bro, like, you a fucking superhero, bro. And I just want to let you know on the airways that you a fucking superhero.
Team effort, baby. And I think even that sentiment, while you were saying that, I was thinking that's Tin Can Phone too. So prison to school pipeline, we're out here advocating for those kids. And that was a perfect, you know, we're now, we got a wrap. They're in Queez's ear, but I think that was a good, you know, that's what you can also expect, you know, from Tin Can Phone in context, you know, with these same kind of lessons and thing, or different lessons, different contexts, same wholesome educational experience. Blue, you got any final thoughts for us before we...
Man, I'm just glad we're back. I'm glad we're talking. So many things to highlight, and every one of these things takes me down a trail of thought about all the different things that are going on in our lives, the things we're working on, the things that haven't been said on radio. Just looking forward to the season and getting those guests on here and breaking it down.
Hey, Boo Radio, Tin Can Phone, Season 2. We got Blue Gallery. You got Michael, Steven, Bernard, Jr., the fucking artist. You got Misfit, Audie, Tin Can Phone. We back for Season 2, motherfuckers.
Beautiful.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Queez.
You are listening to the Tin Can Phone Podcast, where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the source. We tell the story from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on KBOO Community Radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple, and anywhere you catch your podcasts. And make sure to give us a follow over at tincanphonepodcast.com. See you next time.
Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Big Float X on Sunday, July 10th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Tom McCall Bowl in Portland. The Big Float X is the 10th anniversary and final iteration of the Big Float, Portland's celebration of the Willamette River. Festivities include a pre-float parade, live music, and after-party. That's the Big Float X on Sunday, July 10th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Tom McCall Bowl, 90 Southwest Nito Parkway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Times Like Now is an interview program. Interviews with interesting people that are doing cool stuff. My name is Trevor Collins, and my guest today, Maya Nguyen, has been making music most of her life. She is now thrust into the spotlight with the band Envy of None, featuring the guitar player from Rush, Alex Lifeson, on this episode of Times Like Now. Hello, Maya. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
For those who may not know you, or this is an introduction to you and to your music, most recently, you have hit kind of an international spotlight or international stage in your collaboration and joining the band with Alex Lifeson, famous of Rush.
Yeah. It's been an incredible project to be a part of. It's called Envy of None, and I'm the lead singer, but I also got to write a lot of the lyrics and vocal melodies and played a couple instruments here and there. But it was just a really wonderful collaboration.
Let's hear just a little bit. This is Dog's Life from Envy of None.
You know, because Rush has such a huge and renowned international fan base, it's really opened the doors for this project to be heard by a lot of people all around the world, and it's just been amazing to see the scope. And I think, you know, just getting messages from people in all countries and from different places all around the world has been really amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure the response has been kind of new and kind of fantastic for you. You're rooted and based in Portland, Oregon area. And you've had your own musical experience and career. I've been reading about you. You've done quite a bit of collaboration and work on your own. I was watching the Lift video that you have out.
Thank you.
That was fun. It was great to see the Portland locations that I'm so familiar with there on the Broadway Bridge and around town.
Yeah, that was a really fun video to shoot. We just filmed it in one day, kind of on a whim, and we just went around town and got a bunch of shots, and it actually ended up being one of my favorite music videos that we made. It's easy to get some good shots when you're downtown in Portland and just walking around and enjoying it. It's a beautiful city.
Yeah, very photogenic area. But where are you living? Do you still live in the area?
Yeah, I mean, I tell people I live in Portland, but I'm technically in Gresham, which is outside of Portland, Portland adjacent.
Yes, you're in the burbs there. And
yeah.
the experience working with Alex and with the band, is this your first experience working with any band, or have you been, because what I have seen is you and your guitar, rather singer-songwriter centralized. Is this your first band?
It is. It's my first band. I've done lots of collaborations. There's a really great female hard rock duo called Dreadlight that I've done a few collaborations with before. But this is my first, like, yeah, it's my first band.
What has this been like? I mean, you said you got to do some instrumentation and wrote some lyrics. So you were in the studio, you know, knocking out the songs and, you know, doing the grind to get this done. That's what is the name of the album? Is there a title?
It's just self-titled. I think it's just Envy of None. I don't know. I think we're talking about working on a second record, so I don't know what we'll call the second one. Maybe Envy of None 2. I don't know.
Part 2. You did this recording in Toronto. Is that right?
We only actually recorded two songs in Toronto. I went when I was... It's quite a few years ago. We started working on this project about 5 years ago. I was around 20 years old when I first went to Toronto, and we worked on a couple of the earlier songs, and we went in the studio and I recorded vocals, but everything else, and even before that, I did here in my sort of home studio. I sent my stems, I recorded my vocal parts, and I like it that way because then I can experiment and I don't have to worry about sounding perfect all the time. You know, I can experiment and then delete the things I don't like and really get it until I get it exactly how I want it and do all the layers. Sometimes I would send up to like 40 or 50 vocal layers, harmonies and different textures. And so it was really nice to be able to sort of work remotely, which is mostly what we did, even though Alex, Alf, and Andy were all in Toronto together. They still didn't work in the studio together. They sent files back and forth from their own studios as well. So it was all very remote. So it didn't really change anything when COVID happened because we were all already working sort of remotely anyway. But yeah, we did get two songs done in the studio together in Toronto, and that was really fun. But everything else was just sort of in our own little studios.
Yeah, amazing technology to make that happen. I did not know that this project started 5 years ago. I did not know that. That's amazing. Well, congratulations on all of that,
of
course. And how about touring? Is this band doing any shows, and where and when?
Yeah, we've talked a lot about it. I think, you know, I don't think we'll ever do any sort of big tours. Alex obviously toured so many years with Rush, and those are very intense tours all around the world, and I don't think he's sort of, you know, moved on from that, retired from that in a way. And I think that if we do some shows, he's open to a few sort of special shows or maybe like joining for bigger cities, and then I would maybe do a bigger tour with me and other band members, and then he would join or they would join for the bigger cities kind of thing. So we've talked about that as a possibility. I think we're kind of waiting to see what happens, and maybe I've also heard Andy talk about, like, maybe once we release the second album, we'll do a tour or something. So I know it's up in the air, but we're not putting any pressure on it. I think we're sort of waiting to see. And I think our main sort of focus is just recording and making music. And then if there's like a couple of special shows or festivals or maybe TV appearances or something, I don't know. I'm hoping for that. I really want to go on like Jimmy Fallon or something. Would be awesome.
That
but
would
fingers
be
crossed,
awesome.
It would be great.
And it would be awesome also if there was a Portland or maybe Seattle show.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that would be amazing.
I would make sure to be there. Yeah, absolutely. So a little bit of your background. Let's go back into the Maya photo album of, let's say, high school. When did you start writing your own music? What was the first instrument you ever played as learning? And what was the, you know, like, when did you write your first song, for instance?
Yeah, so that's it goes back pretty far. I first started playing piano when I was 3. I started taking lessons at around 4, and I loved it. I loved piano so much, and I loved going to lessons, and I loved just playing the piano. Before they even put me in lessons, I was just mesmerized by it, and my dad played the piano, and so one of my earliest memories is like memorizing 2 notes on the piano that sounded good together and getting really excited and playing those 2 notes again like the next day. It's one of my earliest memories, and just that thrill of like making sounds and harmonies, something about that always sort of triggered something inside of me that was just excited and inspired. And so I started working with my piano teacher when I was around 7, and I started writing my first songs and composing them on the piano. They were just instrumental pieces. I don't remember them at all. I know I performed one of the songs I wrote at a recital when I was like 7 or 8. I don't know if it was very good, but I know that that was like my first song. And then when I was around 12 and 13, I started to teach myself guitar. And that's when I started writing sort of my first songs with lyrics on both the piano and the guitar. I love to sing. I sang in choir, but I didn't think I was a very good singer for a very, very long time. I just really enjoyed it, and I loved making music. And in high school, I would just come home from school, and I would have the house to myself, and that sort of allowed me to just, I would sit at the piano for hours and sing and improvise and write songs and let myself be loud and annoying and sound bad, and it really helped me sort of develop my voice and my confidence, and I just did it for myself. I loved it. I loved making music, and I still do.
What was, I guess, during those times, those teenage years, which, you know, the teenage brain grabs onto the music of the teenage years, and that becomes your favorite music because, well, that's when the brain is doing that sort of thing. What music were you listening to, and what was kind of an inspiration for you at that time?
I think I had this playlist that I would listen on repeat. I would walk home from school, and it was like a 3-mile walk, and I would listen to the same playlist over and over and over again. And it had a lot of really various artists from different eras and genres, and there was everything from, let's see, there's Feist and Amy Mann and Punch Brothers and Radiohead, Norah Jones, and the Ting Tings, and No Doubt, and it was just all over the place, and Queen, and there's just a little bit of everything in there, I think, and Iron and Wine I started listening to around that time. I loved indie artists, and I loved classics, and I loved alternative, and it was just sort of a really big blend of everything, and I listened to that playlist so much that I memorized the order of it, you know? And if I listened to those songs out of that order, it felt wrong, you know? After that, I was like, no, this song goes after this song. It had no rhyme or reason to the order. It was sort of just random. But I listened to it so many times that, like, it was hard for me to listen to those songs outside of that specific order after that.
Yeah, it becomes your mixtape. So when you hear that song on the radio, like, no, this isn't the song that's supposed to be here. Speaking of just a sidebar, did you go to the Iron and Wine concert that was in Portland recently?
No, I didn't know they were in town. I should have. I would have loved that. They're amazing.
Yeah. So Yeah, every time that I've wanted to see them, every time I either found out too late or Iron and Wine played Mississippi Studios once and it was sold out before I could get in, and I've never been able to see Sam Beam and company. Speaking of local bands and whatnot, you did some work with the Portland Cello Project. What did you do with them and when was that?
Yeah, so actually pretty soon after I moved to Portland, I was around 19 years old, and I had been a fan of Portland Cello Project for a while, and my friend slash manager was a huge fan of Portland Cello Project. She had seen them in concert multiple times, and she's like, oh my gosh, Maya, you know, if you got to perform with Portland Cello Project, that would be such a dream. And we had listened to their songs for a very long time at that point, and you know, we were in the area, we just moved, and on a whim we sort of reached out to them on Instagram. And I didn't have a lot recorded at that point. I had sort of some weird songs recorded. I had this weird sort of song I did for a small horror film that was really spooky and just like this weird a cappella thing. And so we sent what we had and we're like, hey, you know, I'm a singer, I'm just getting to Portland, I would love to collaborate with you. Didn't expect to hear back. And Doug, the head of Portland Cello Project at that point, wrote back and he was like, yeah, let's do something together. And I didn't realize until later how rare that was, because they get people reaching out to them all the time. But I think he actually liked that the music I sent was kind of weird and different. So I guess it worked to my advantage that I had some weirder stuff recorded at that point. He liked that it was sort of spooky and just weird. And he followed up and followed through, and we worked on some arrangements of a couple of my original songs, and he was just so kind. And we did a small tour together like a year or two years later, and we just went through the Northwest, and it was such a dream to perform with them and do some of my original music. And it was such a dream to go back, because I grew up in Washington and in Montana, and so it's such a dream to go back to Missoula, where I'd lived, and play at one of the biggest theaters there at the WOMA, you know, because Portland Cello Project was able to, you know, pull those numbers, and it was such a dream to go back and play at those big theaters and have, you know, all of my friends and family show up and be like, we know her, you know. And it was like one of those big moments for me going back home and showing people that I, you know, I was being successful, I was doing cool things, it was just such a dream. And getting to hear your songs with, you know, 20 cellos and drums and bass is just it's so epic. It's so cool. And you'd never want to perform those songs any differently ever again, because it sounds so good. They're just amazing.
That's very exciting and very humbling to hear you have that first experience. It sounds like that was like a big, you know, like what they call a feather in your cap, or one of those, you know, those hallmark moments that you remember that one. That's cool. And that's great that it got to be with such a great dynamic group as Portland Cello, and you know, your first tour. That's really exciting. Something else that I read and heard about you is something about the Apollo 11's 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
You wrote a song for them?
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah. It was such a crazy sort of circumstance. They did a contest, and so it was a local music company based in Huntsville, and Huntsville is where they have one of the space and rocket centers. And it was a big part of space history that often gets overlooked. But Huntsville, Alabama is like a huge rocket town. Like, they have the Space and Rocket Center. That's where they have Space Camp. There's all sorts of like NASA scientists that live there and work on rockets. And I didn't know that before this, but they did this song contest. A local music company called Listen Local and the Space and Rocket Center put on a song contest to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, which was a couple years ago. And I saw the contest and it was like, it almost seemed too good to be true. I almost didn't think it was a real contest, because like the winner got like $10,000 and performed their song at the Space and Rocket Center and recorded it at Fame Studios. And it was like, wow, this is a big deal. I mean, there's a lot of fake contests out there, but I was like, I just had a good feeling about it. And you just had to write a song about space exploration. And So I sort of pondered it for a few days, and then I suddenly got super inspired, and we had just watched Hidden Figures, which obviously was very inspiring as well. And I sat down and I wrote a song, and then we recorded it that same day. Like, the deadline was coming up very soon, and we recorded it the same day that I wrote it and filmed it, and then we put it out there and submitted it, and then we made it past the rounds. And a few weeks later, they did sort of a live Zoom announcement of the winner, and they told me that I had won the contest, and it was like such a cool moment for me, and it was just such an amazing trip. Like, obviously the money was a big deal to help, you know, as an independent artist, it's, you struggle, and so that was also very helpful and like a big deal for me. And then also getting an all-expense-paid trip to go to Huntsville and to perform at the Space and Rocket Center for the 50th anniversary gala. Like, the entire audience was astronauts and rocket scientists and their families, and it was like the coolest thing ever to be there underneath the rockets and get a personal tour of the Space and Rocket Center, and just an amazing, amazing experience. And then getting to record the song at Fame Studios, and that was like one of my first times in a bigger studio like that, you know, and we had a couple hours, and I just played as many instruments as I could and recorded vocals. And it's such an amazing, amazing studio that has a ton of history. Like, I got to play on Aretha Franklin's Wurlitzer for that song, and that was like super cool. Yeah, wow. It's just
what,
like,
is the, what is the name of this song? Is it out? Is it called Show the World? People can hear it.
It is, yeah. Show the World. So if you hear at the beginning, there's this Wurlitzer organ sound that comes in, and that's that. It's Aretha Franklin's Wurlitzer, which I had to play. I had to play that in the song, you know.
It's a great big world, and there's a little girl with a bright and beaming mind. She dreams of flying high, just like Apollo 69, and breaking through that hardened sky. One day she will show the world she has no fear. Soaring far beyond the stratosphere.
Wow, that is so cool. I'm learning so much about you, and it's very inspiring, and I'm excited for you to see what you're going to do next. And I understand you're doing some acting as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to get more into acting. It was like music and acting were sort of my earliest dreams, and I love getting to act. I've done some independent films, some really small sort of you know, those early films you do when you're starting out. They're not always amazing, but they're something, and they're out there. So I've got a couple of very small independent horror films under my belt. We filmed one of them in like 3 days out in the woods, and there was like barely a script, and some guy running around with an axe, and it was just and not awesome, but you know, it's experience. And recently I got cast in is actually technically a Lionsgate film, which is really cool. It's still a smaller, you know, subsidiary of them, but it's still a pretty big deal for me. And I got cast as one of the lead roles. It's a snowboarding film with a dog in it. It's like the dog can snowboard, sort of like Air Bud, but the snowboarding version of it. So it's really cool. And I snowboard a little bit, but I had a stunt double who made me look way better. My stunt double is like a 6-foot dude, you know, with a beard, and they had to cover it up, like the mask and stuff, which is pretty funny. But it was a lot of fun filming, and it's called Powder Pup, and it's going to come out next year, I think around December-ish of next year. But yeah, it was a ton of fun, and I'm trying to get more into it and hoping I can get an agent, get more auditions. But I love it. I love acting, and you know, it's a craft, and I want to keep practicing and getting better, and I just enjoy it so much. Similar to music, you know, it's storytelling, and you know, and I love storytelling. I love sharing emotion, and it's performance, and I love it.
Let's see here. There was something else that I wanted to. Oh yes, you have a series of songs about Lucy Gray. That seems to be a reoccurring name, Lucy Gray. What can you explain some of that, and how many songs are there?
Yeah, so I did this series of, there's sort of like covers, but I'm actually writing the music. So there was a prequel to The Hunger Games called The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. They're actually filming the movie for it right now, but there was a book that came out a couple years ago, and the book was full of songs. One of the lead characters was a singer-songwriter, and it was full of these lyrics that were supposed to be songs. And Heidi and I were reading it, and she was getting really frustrated because she couldn't imagine these lyrics as an actual song. She's like, what does the song sound like, you know? And I, being a musician and a songwriter, couldn't help myself from trying to turn those lyrics into an actual song. And she's like, we should just, you know, let's film one of these and put it out on the internet. And so I did sort of a cosplay as the character, and recorded one of my arrangements that I did for one of the songs and put it out there. And it did really well because, you know, it's a very popular book franchise, and there's a lot of people reading it feeling similarly, wondering if somebody had tried to put these lyrics to music. And so inevitably it was like, oh, well, you did the song and we love it, will you do more, will you do the other ones? And so there's, I think, 10 or 11 songs total that I ended up doing, and I wrote the music and sort of performed them as actual songs and took the lyrics from the book and did that. And they did really well, and all these videos were really popular, especially for me. Like, it was kind of crazy. It was like tapping into a really big network of people that were really enthusiastic, and all of them were reading the books and sending me such sweet comments, and I felt kind of like a celebrity for a little while. You know, I got fan mail, and people were drawing fan art of me that was just incredible and beautiful, and you know, I just felt so supported and loved. And so, like, I sort of like became Lucy Gray for a little while, and that was really cool. It was just really amazing, and the scope of it was huge. You know, there's people all around the world sending me messages, and then they decided they were going to make a film out of the book. And ironically, Lionsgate, again, kind of a common theme lately, but their legal team about a year ago reached out to me with a cease and desist to take them all down. They were like, you know, because they had just acquired the rights to the movie and they didn't want my stuff, because it was so popular, they're like, oh no, this is a problem, it's going to compete with ours. And so it was a whole legal battle, and I was really sad for a while, because it was this thing I was really proud of. I had, like, it was the first time I had produced my own music too. Like, I've been learning how to produce, and so it was the first time I sort of like let myself produce my own music. I was really proud. I worked so hard on these songs and these videos, and it was like a whole album, and every song had a music video, essentially. It was a lot of work. And so I was really devastated for a while. And it took a lot of time, and I had some help from really amazing friends of mine who know legal things, and we had a lot of back and forth. And then eventually we reached sort of an agreement of, like, they let me keep them up on YouTube, but I can't keep them up on streaming platforms, and then, like, until they release their versions or something like that. It's like a whole thing. I don't know, it was very confusing. But we figured it out, we reached an agreement, and I got to put my videos back up, which is amazing. And but yeah, and that's why there's so many Lucy Gray related things on my YouTube channel, and they were up on my Spotify for a long time too. But I'm really proud of the songs, and I think they turned out really cool, and I loved the book, and I loved getting to talk to people about The Hunger Games and the books, and just sort of tapping into that world was really special.
That sounds very special, actually. And speaking of which, where can people find your music and listen to these things?
Yeah, so if you want to watch the Lucy Gray videos and songs, they're just on YouTube now, although you can also get the MP3s on my Patreon, which is the best way to support me. I post demos and have a huge folder of song downloads there. So if you support me on Patreon, you get immediately like 50 songs or something like that. And it's a great way to support me as an artist. And then also I have music up on Spotify and everywhere else, just under my name. And then Envy of None also, if you search them, they've got music everywhere, and we're on vinyl, which is really exciting. And then I'm also working on my debut album right now, that's going to be out very soon. And that will be up everywhere online, and we're going to be making vinyl and CDs and have those available for order as well, which is very exciting.
That's exciting about the Envy of None being on vinyl. I was looking at that. I might have to get that for my own collection. So from the video that I'm looking at right now of you in your room, I see a lot of instruments around you in the background. And are you sitting at a piano now?
I am. It's a keyboard. It's my MIDI keyboard. But yes, I've got a keyboard in front of me, and then it's kind of a mess back there right now. But
I don't want to pressure you, but would you play a little something in the last, let's say, minute that we have?
Ooh, I don't think I can get the piano routed through the sound system is my only problem.
It won't run through that microphone, I see.
Yeah, I wish it would, though.
All right. Well, once again, speaking Maya Nguyen, famously now of Envy of None and working on your own acting career, looking forward to seeing you on the big screen in Snow Pup come this winter, maybe. I'll be watching for that. And I guess this is another question I like to ask of folks. What do you do when you're not making music? When you're not music-related stuff, what else do you do?
I watch a lot of Netflix, and I've been trying to go on more hikes, which has been really nice. I've recently become obsessed with this Netflix show called Heartstopper, which is really sweet and just super, really sweet show, and I love it, and it makes me happy. But I love going on hikes, and I have a very cute dog that is obsessed with fetch, and we play fetch every day, multiple times a day. I've been trying to paint a little bit more. I'm not very good at painting, but I enjoy it. And read a little bit more, which is good for my brain instead of scrolling endlessly on social media. A little bit of things, a little bit of relaxation, going to therapy, working on myself, all those things.
Well, I do hope to see you on a stage or on a movie screen somewhere in the future, maybe with Envy of None, maybe with one of your other projects. Maya Nguyen, once again, thank you so much for spending a little time with me today.